Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Brits and Pieces MMA podcast. Those of you who thought we'd spin out at three were wrong. So we're taking bets on number five, but we're still here. I'm joined once again by our deputy editor, Mr. Paul Anderson. Hello, Paul.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, whatever.
Good afternoon, good morning, and good night. What was that from? Bruce Almighty, something like that. Anyway, we're here for the MMA. And principally the UFC this weekend. There's two cards. We're in for a treat. Two cards on one day. I'm not sure, has that ever happened before, Paul, in your memory?
I believe there was, was the Tough Brazil finale and the Tough Nations.
Yeah, and I'm sure they've done...
They were pretty much on the same day or else, the time zones were still very, very close proximity, but I don't think there's been two, just literally one leading into another. There's like a 30-minute break between the Fight Night Berlin and the Tough Brazil finale this time.
Yeah.
So it's like 13, 14 straight hours of UFC action and adverts.
Exactly. We're treated. Although, looking at some of the fights, some of them might not be a treat, but I suppose you have to watch them to find out, don't you? The Berlin card, the UFC Fight Night 41 card, is being streamed on Fight Pass, but I believe the main event is on, or the main card, sorry, is also on BT Sports.
Tape delay. I can't remember what time it's airing at.
Yeah, it's part of their deal, I think, to show European events. So even though in theory it should be a Fight Pass exclusive event, I believe BT Sports are actually showing the main card. But if you want to watch the prelims for that, then obviously Fight Pass would be your destination for those. So first of all, we'll chat about the Fight Night 41 card, as I believe that's up first, with the Tough finale coming on in the middle of the night, as is often the case from over in the Americas. So we're going to just chat about the main event for each card. So obviously with this one, the main event is Mark Munoz and Gegard Mousasi. And Paul, who have you gone for in that one?
I've gone for Mark Munoz in this one, purely for the reason that Gegard Mousasi has struggled against very high-level wrestlers in the past. His takedown defense just isn't there, and with Munoz's pretty ferocious ground and pound, I think he's going to land enough strikes on that, should he actually choose to take it to the mat. My biggest concern about that would be that he would be, want to try and test his punching power a wee bit more against the more stand-up orientated Mousasi. But if he plays it smart, there's no reason at all why he shouldn't win this, even though he's quite a decent underdog in it at 11-5 at the last time I checked.
Yeah, I must admit, I have actually gone for Mousasi. I am surprised that Mousasi is the favourite, to be honest with you. I think it's a fairly even fight. I agree with you. I think Munoz has probably got the better power. I think Mousasi is probably the one who would pick the better shots. So my gut feeling is he's just going to run, basically, from Munoz, avoid the takedown, and try and sort of pick him off from the outside. Whether he's able to do that is another question. That's just was my gut feeling when I looked at the fight. But this to me really is a 50-50. And I think Munoz has probably got the better all-round game, but whether he can apply that against Mousasi remains to be seen. Certainly I would say, to me, this is a down-the-line fight for me. If anything, sounds like would favour Munoz. So it's a little bit strange that the betting kind of gone the other way, but I don't know whether their sort of knowledge of Mousasi isn't as thorough, maybe. The people who are doing the odds or the people that are betting, maybe. But it would seem a fairly even fight to me. And like you say, even you're leaning towards Munoz. So I think a bet could be in order for that one.
Yep.
What do you think of the quality of that as the main event for that card?
For a fight pass card, it's pretty good, I guess. It's there is some divisional implications in that with it as well. So it's yeah, I've no real problems with it at
Yeah.
all, to be honest.
No, I mean, it's fairly solid. I mean, I think in any main event nowadays, you really want some sort of title implications. I mean, I think you could probably extract some of that from this bout. I wouldn't say the winner gets a title shot or probably even gets in the top two or three, but certainly the winner keeps their name up in the, up in the stakes. The winner probably drops down to sort of the mid-level, once again. I think, from my understanding, that the fans in Germany are fairly happy with that as the main event, based on the fact that I think they're just, like we are often in the UK, just happy to get an event every now and again.
Yeah,
So,
4.5 years, I think. Three
yeah,
and a half since
exactly.
the last one in Germany. That was UFC 122.
Yeah, I think hampered by the fact, if I'm right in saying, that they haven't been on TV over there.
That's correct.
Yeah, I don't know, a bureaucratic thing, I think, over there. So hopefully this is a step in the right direction and on getting them back on, on broadcast. But obviously that remains to be seen, as always. So I think we've covered that one, and so we'll move on to the Tough Brazil 3 finale, which main eventing is Stipe Miocic against Fabio Maldonado. Not as I think I mentioned in our Pick Zone piece in my little description, an archaic return to the good old days for the UFC, where a heavyweight is fighting a light heavyweight, but Fabio Maldonado stepping up on short notice to replace Junior dos Santos. So yeah, actually doing the UFC quite a big favour. And Maldonado's fighting at heavyweight, so it's not. I was going to say it's not going to be a mismatch. It is going to be a mismatch because Maldonado should be fighting at 205, really.
That should probably be fighting at about 185 because, no offense to him, he's a wee bit soft
Yes,
around the midsection. That's
I know. I hear
probably
you. I hear you on that one.
gonna make him subconscious.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. Yeah, I don't recall what he actually weighed in at, but hopefully he sort of, I was going to say, bulked up even more. I don't know if that'd necessarily help him, but yeah, I think obviously a lot of fans in Brazil disappointed to see Dos Santos go off that card, especially that would have been a really big main event for a tough finale. This one probably slightly on the opposite side, a slightly weak main event, but obviously they did what they had to do. I hesitate to ask because I think I know what the answer is going to be, but what do you think about the outcome of this one?
Stipe. Yeah, I've got him via TKO. I just think he's, just the larger frame, greater reach and all that, although Maldonado is he's just one of these tough people that keep on coming and all that, and that's it actually makes it more of an interesting fight than the Dos Santos one, because personally I think Dos Santos was just a level above Stipe. Probably would have just steamrolled him within the first round. But Maldonado, if he can get in close, just work the body into the head, there's no reason why he can't win, in theory, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone's got a puncher's chance, I guess, but I just think the power and the weight will be the big factor, and Stipe will, basically TKO on what should be a middleweight.
Yeah, I've gone for Miocic via TKO as well, to be fair. Yeah, I think, like you say, Maldonado, you can't 100% count him out, and I suppose for that reason, it's a fight worth watching because you kind of know something's going to go down. I believe it's a 5-round fight, so I personally can't see Maldonado making it 5 rounds. So
No.
he's either going to go out with a blaze of glory or he's going to win in a blaze of glory. I think that kind of makes it quite an interesting fight to watch because something's going to go down. I really
Yeah,
can't
I.
see Maldonado making it past about 3 rounds, given his usual sort of cardio issues, and especially if he's put on some more, additional weight and stuff to try and bulk up to get to heavyweight, because you have to be over 205 pounds, don't you, to make the heavyweight? So he must be at least over 205 pounds. So I think that's going to make him slow down a lot, certainly if he gets into the second and third. So his best chance has got to be to kind of take it to Miocic right out the gate and try and get a KO or a TKO, I think. But you know, it's again, like I say, it's a fight worth watching, even though you kind of know in your own mind what the likely outcome is, you know. But what Maldonado can do will be interesting. I do think Miocic obviously has an advantage, obviously with the you know, the strength and the size, and you know, just the fact that he normally fights at heavyweight. You know, he's used to fighting at that weight, and how his body's going to feel and react. Because obviously Maldonado's taking a bit more of a chance. So, but fair play to him for stepping up on short notice. It didn't really seem like any other, you know, light heavyweight or heavyweight of any, you know, more importance wanted to take that bout. So, you know, fair play to him for stepping in and rescuing that, you know, that main event really. It's a bit of a thin card otherwise, I would say, but you know, I think it's worth probably watching, you know, the tough Brazil finals. You know, you're going to see these guys fighting, you know, in the UFC soon enough. You know, even the losers will probably end up on some sort of contract. So I think that the main card's certainly worth watching, you know, just for, you know, the purposes of getting to know some of the fighters, you know, that will be coming through the ranks, you know, down the line. So, and you've got Damian Maia on that card as well. So, you know, I think, you know, if you can't stay up, watch it tomorrow on tape delay, then, you know, hopefully it'll be a good event. Hopefully, I'm sort of hoping with both of them, they are going to be better than they look, if that makes sense. Do you get that same sort of feeling, or?
Yeah, well, Damian Maia's on it. That makes me happy, generally. Anyway, he's just amazing to watch whenever he actually uses his jiu-jitsu. But yeah, there's always a bit of an interest around, you know, the finale of an Ultimate Fighter. And to be honest, I actually haven't watched this series of Tough Brazil at all.
No,
so
same.
Very, very little about the guys, so it's a little bit interesting to see.
I just find it, I think there isn't as much sort of antics and stuff that go on, you know, in the other ones. Not that that's what I watch it for, but I just find it's quite difficult to watch people training for quite long periods of time with subtitles, and you know, it's just I don't know. I find it a little bit grating to watch, you know, for long periods of time. But you know, I suppose if you're a real true out and out fight fan, you'd watch it. But I'm happy to just kind of see who was the better fight, who are the best fighters on the season, watch them, you know, slug it out, and then, you know, make my own mind up from there, really. So that's my reasoning, but
the language barrier and having to read it, I guess. But if you say, you know, there's less antics and people trying to prank each other, you're actually kind of selling it to me more, because that's kind of why I can't really be bothered
with
the
old. Yeah, I mean, like I say, that's not necessarily why I watch it, but there's only so much. I'm kind of finding the same thing with Tough, I think it's 19, with BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar, which I'm obviously watching. You know, obviously we're going to the finale, so I'm watching it specifically to kind of know who I'm supposed to be cheering for and stuff like that.
I'll let you tell me who I should be cheering for.
I'll explain it all to you. That's fine. But yeah, there's some episodes where just nothing happens, and I just find it really tough not to. I'd Sky Plus it, because it's on at 3. I think it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I just find myself trying really hard not to fast forward through it, because it will just literally be them going into training, they do a bit of training, then there's a break, you know, then they weigh in and there's a break, you know, and then the fight happens. And if it's a good fight, you kind of forget about the fact that the first half of the episode was just, you know, filler basically. But if it's a boring fight as well, you just think, I don't know why I even watched that. I could have not watched that quite happily, just found out who the winner was, and it wouldn't have bothered me, you know. I think, I don't necessarily want them to go back to antics, but I think sometimes they need to put something else in there, you know, whether it's like a return to the sort of challenges or something they did before, or, you know, something to make you want to watch the first half of the show that doesn't have the fight in it. Because whilst they're, you know, doing the training and everything, they're not really explaining to you what they're doing. You know, it's not like you can use the first half while they're grappling around to kind of get some tips or learn a bit more about what they're doing behind the scenes. It's all sort of like cut together, people punching bags, people running. Like, you don't really gain an insight into what they're actually doing. Which I don't know if that's sort of deliberate so that the other team don't know what's going on or what.
Well,
But
I mean, it doesn't matter because it's all broadcast after the event anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
I mean,
you know, so it's not really about the other team knowing what they're doing, because all these fights they're all run and done by the time this goes to air.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Personally, what I think they should do is, in terms of the training and that, obviously they're filming a lot and then it's all edited to death afterwards.
Yeah.
Say if someone wins via triangle or whatever, you go back throughout the week where they're training on that, they'll maybe be drilling that, saying, "Oh look, here's a setup, how you get this on whatever," and then that will give the viewer an idea whenever they see it in the fight of how it was actually achieved. It's like, oh,
yeah,
I can see
exactly.
That actual technique. And it would also educate them a wee bit more, about the subtleties of weight distribution and striking, or position before submission and grappling.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I 100% agree. Something like that would be absolutely ideal. I think they need to give you something to make you want to watch any part of it except for the fight. And obviously, some of the things that would make you want to watch it are, if the trailer before says, so and so has an altercation with so and so, you think, oh, okay, right, but I'll better watch that to see what happened. Even if it is a bit car crash TV sometimes, But if they're doing the training and they're saying, look, well, we're going into this fight, we think his weakness is a left hook, so this is what we're going to show you how to throw a left hook, and, something like that, where you're getting something from it. Because obviously the fighters are getting something from training with, the trainers that are there and everything, but I just feel like I watched the first half and I just think I didn't even really need to see that, because nothing actually happened. I didn't learn any moves. I saw him running about a bit, but that doesn't really tell me anything. You see him hitting the pads, you see him they do this sort of thing where they kind of talk for ages about like where they came from and stuff like that. I'm not saying get rid of that, but that can sometimes be about 15 minutes of just them talking. Just absolute filler, really, of just, I came from here and I did this and in my first fight and blah, blah, blah. And it just, to be honest with you, just cut that right down to like a couple of minutes per fighter, in my opinion, because, a lot of it is just stuff that's not relevant, it's not interesting. They're just doing it because they've got time to fill, because nothing else is going on, And to be honest with you, next week's one, they said they're going to be doing the coaches challenge. And that instantly is making me want to watch the first, the first half an hour, the first portion. Because they kind of teased it by, it's some sort of kayaking thing. And Frankie Edgar's kind of having a sort of a laugh and a joke at BJ Penn. Because apparently BJ Penn kayaks to see his friend, because obviously he lives in Hawaii. So he's like, oh, this is a fix. You guys have fixed it, because he kayaks all the time. I'm thinking, this is already making me interested in the first half of the next episode. It's already making me think, oh, wouldn't it be funny if Frankie won, and also that sort of thing. So I don't know if necessarily a return to like coaches' challenges is the answer, but they need something to hook people into the show other than the fight, because if the fight turns out to be pants, then why is anyone going to bother watching it, So and they've had a few good ones and a few stinkers on this series. So like I say, I'm not sure how long I would have stayed or would have stayed with it had I not been going to the finale. But obviously the fact that, going to the finale kind of gives me an extra incentive to kind of stick with it, to find out, who beat who, and, who's a, bit of an arse and who isn't, stuff like that. So, but yeah, I think they could do with shaking it up a little bit, but,
I'm actually more interested in the next series, so I am, where it's, we're actually going to have a champion crowned at the end.
Yeah,
of
the women's strawweight.
15, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's another thing. I do think people at this stage are slightly more, rightly or wrongly, and for whatever their reasons. Obviously, your reasons are very pure, but I think a lot of people are more interested in them at the moment with Tough, with where there's something different about it, like it's women, or I know it's been talked about maybe doing another comeback series, something like that. I think that. Yeah, exactly. I think it's just, people kind of need a hook. Just having, like, welterweights and middleweights or heavyweights is kind of getting a bit tired out now. They need something else to freshen it up, and I think the women's strawweight, should do that. It'll bring in a fair few new viewers and people who probably get reinterested in it because of the fact that it is something new. And then yeah, I think it'll be a good series. I'll be very interested to watch it, and I think I will go out of my way to keep up with that one. So, and especially because it is a new division, if you don't watch that, when they do start fighting on the you know, on the main UFC cards, unless you're going to go back and watch their fights on YouTube or whatever, then you're not really going to know or care about them much. It's not like a division that's already full of fighters. You know, these people that are going to be fighting on Tough 20 are the division, with the exception of
Yeah,
two or
pretty
three.
much.
So, you know, if you miss that, then you've kind of missed a whole division, you know. So that's as good a reason as any to watch it, I think. So, yeah, cool. We went off on a bit of a tangent there, but I hope everyone enjoys our little chat on Tough and how we can improve it. And obviously, if anyone else has got any ideas, then you can always tweet us at BritsPiecesMMA or email us or on our contact page on the website. So, So, we'll go on to our news section, our hot topics here. And we'll start with UFC 173. Which we've obviously neglected to mention so far, deliberately, so we could discuss it in this section. But, Paul, how wrong were we?
Is it possible to be any more wrong? Yeah, damn. TJ Dillashaw looked fantastic.
Absolutely.
You know, I was... You know, my mouth was literally open going, what is going on here? This is not how it should be. And I think pretty much most of the world was wrong, maybe apart from Team Alpha Male, Dwayne Ludwig and their families.
Yeah, I think there was one or two journalists who might have called it. I saw a thing on Junkie that I think it was Danny Downs, who was ex-WEC, ex-UFC, apparently called it. I haven't seen it in black and white, but apparently he's being credited as having called it. But I think him and, like you say, Alpha Male, probably the only people in the entire world who didn't think Burrell was going to win that fight. But what do you think the sort of key was for Dillashaw, you know, going into that fight? What did he do differently?
It was just better on the night. Just constantly pressuring. His footwork looked fantastic. Personally, he was just not static at all. I was quite surprised with Burrell. He looked very, very flat-footed and quite easy to pick apart. Or Dillashaw, you know, to his credit, made it look that easy. A lot of the credit has to come down to Dwayne Ludwig for the severe increase in striking prowess that the Team Alpha Male guys have now got.
Yeah, and he's leaving Alpha Male now, isn't he? So, but I did read a thing that he apparently wants to continue training with Dillashaw. I think Dillashaw, by all accounts, was his sort of star pupil out of them all. I think from sort of what I've read online, he sort of clashed a bit with Uriah Faber and maybe one or two of the bigger personalities in the gym.
Yeah, apparently there's a wee bit of a, you know, difference in opinion and all that, but
yeah, you know, I think for him
only
probably
to be there for a year anyway, so what's,
you
know,
yeah, and he's done a lot, you know, he's done a lot in that year. He's definitely improved them. I mean, I know people point to their record in title fights, but you've got to get to a title fight. You know, you don't just you don't lose 10 fights and then get a title fight. You know, he's coached those guys to get to a title fight. You know, okay, you know, they only just won one now, but like you say, he's only been there a year. You know, they obviously had their own issues, but I think with Dillashaw, I think it seems to me like Ludwig thought, you know, here's a guy I can kind of mould. You know, he's got raw talent, but I can make him into the fighter that he can be. Whereas I think with people like Faber, I mean, they're only going to allow Ludwig to have so much influence on their own style, aren't they? Because
they've been doing it for such a long time and all
exactly.
That as well. They'll have developed their own bad habits, so to speak, and that's going to be hard to knock out of them.
Exactly, and I think with Dillashaw, I think Ludwig almost saw, you know, a blank canvas, you know, a very good blank canvas, but a blank canvas he could paint a masterpiece with, and you know, that's what he did. I just thought the thing that just took me back was Burrell is obviously a good counter striker, which in theory, when we obviously saying that Dillashaw's, you know, attacking and stuff a lot, would play into Burrell's hands, but he just seemed to be able to get in and out without taking any damage, and he was just so aggressive. It was almost kind of the old adage of you know, the best form of defence is attack, because you know Barão couldn't get anything on Dillashaw because he was coming. Dillashaw was coming in, tagging him, and then just getting the hell out again and moving, and you know everything that you would say that you need to do to beat Barão. But he's the only one who's kind of put it into practice. But I think we all called Barão to win by TKO or KO within the first two rounds, and we couldn't have been much more wrong, could we? But thank goodness that basically everyone else is wrong, so we're not, you know, the only culprits or anything by any means. But do you think that Barão should get an immediate rematch, or think they
no.
should go another way?
No, I mean he's, you know, his record and that speaks for himself. But he was just from bell to bell those first four rounds before the stoppage in the fifth. He was just outclassed. You know, it's not like it was, you know, like, oh, that was a fluke, like Chris Weidman. Not that I'm saying that, but a lot of people, you know, said,
yeah.
oh, he got lucky. Anderson was just messing around. You know, immediate
yeah.
rematch. It's not like BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar where it was close.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
yeah,
know,
I
it was
think
completely not a domination, and you know, there's other contenders in that, right, to step up.
Well, there has to be two conditions, really, for an immediate rematch, I think, and this is something I'm sure I read, so apologies to whoever I'm not crediting by saying this, but it either needs to be a champion that's been a champion for so long, such as Anderson Silva. Obviously, that was partly to do with the way it happened as well, but a champion who's been a champion for so long that they've earned that right. You know,
yeah.
they've maybe had 7, 8, 9, 10 defences, and you can just say, well, it could have been an off night, let's do it again. You know, I think that's one argument, and even that argument, if they got beaten handily, you know, you could have another argument about that method. And obviously the other method, the main one, is if the fight was very close, and like you say, you know, this one wasn't close at all. And going back to the first sort of criteria, you know, Barão hasn't been that sort of dominant champion for years, and you know, I think he's defended it maybe two or three times, as far as I'm aware. But that's probably only been within the last 18 months. It's not like he's defended it six times over 4 years, or you know, something like that. Obviously, that'd be quite a low rate of you know, fighting. But you know what I'm saying? He hasn't kind of built up that thing of like, well, he was such a good champion, you know, we have to let him have another go just to see if that was a fluke. He doesn't really fill either of those criteria, so therefore I don't think you can really be justified in a rematch. However, I do think if he beats one person, they'll put him in. I think they'll make Dillashaw and Asensau. Is that right?
Yeah, they've got Dillashaw lost a split decision.
Yeah, and that was apparently a very close split decision.
It
a lot
was,
of people
yeah,
thought Dillashaw won, and if it hadn't have been in Brazil, he may have won.
Oh, and Asensau, he's won his last, what, 5, 6, apparently, according to that. But
yeah.
I mean, got that close win. He was due for the shot anyway.
Yeah.
So let them two have their rematch since it was a close fight. And personally, what I think, Barão, and it now sets up the Dominic Cruz fight, should he ever decide to come back or
yes.
stop getting injured.
Because apparently he is 2 to 4 months out, they reckon, so from fighting, I believe. So that's a potential match, and then the winner of that one probably gets either gets a rematch with Dillashaw in the case of Barão, or faces him for the title in the case of Cruz. I think that would be a great fight. I guess the only sort of spanner in the works would be if Cruz is out any longer, then they may want to do, you know, Barão against you know, someone else. I do think one more. I think Dillashaw will fight again. I think Barão will fight again. I think whoever Barão fights next, if he wins that fight and Dillashaw wins his fight, I think they make that fight again, because I think they know it'll be a fairly good draw now. I think obviously 173, they were trying to hype it all the time, you know, this is a pound for pound best in the world, blah, blah, blah. They've kind of got instant hype somewhat on a rematch, because it's going to be Barão, the guy no one thought could be beaten, you know, Dillashaw, the guy who did it, you know, the kind of all-American hero type, you know, can Barão get it back, you know. I think, although it's not a big, big title fight, necessarily in the, you know, the whole of the UFC, the rematch, I think, would do pay-per-view numbers, decent pay-per-view numbers, just because of the, you know, the first fight. And it's going to be, can Burrell come back? Does he have something else in his locker? Or is Dillashaw as good as, you know, we think he is at the moment? So, you know, I think that'd be an interesting fight. But yeah, I mean, there's other good fighters in that division. Now Dillashaw's the champion, you know. Everyone's going to be back on alert, aren't they? You know, everyone's going to be thinking, well, you know, he had his weaknesses before. Why can't we exploit him again? You know, so I think Dillashaw's kind of going to be the, I don't know what the word for it is, really. He's going to be the sort of the target at the moment. I think some people were a bit, had either thought Brown lost or were a bit maybe concerned that they weren't going to be able to beat Burrell. I think there'll be a lot of people in that division now thinking, well, okay, Dillashaw beat Burrell, but I think I can beat Dillashaw. So that puts a big sort of target on his head. So, but that one will play out, and I personally hope that they do get to do it again. I think they will at some point down the line. Even if Dillashaw drops the title to someone else, I can still see them fighting again. Just because I think people want to know what will happen when Burrell knows what Dillashaw is going to do. So, but yeah, we shall see on that one. So our second news topic is the Chael Sonnen, Wanderlei Silva, Vitor Belfort love triangle, as it was, that emerged this week, as Wanderlei Silva reportedly literally ran away from a Nevada State Athletic Commission drugs test, which has caused him to be knocked out of his slot against Chael Sonnen at UFC 175. So essentially, the story, as I understand it, is... The guys from the NSAC went to Wanderlei's gym, apparently said, you know, we're here to do a drug test. And according to Chael Sonnen and a few other sources, Wanderlei Silva essentially ran away from them. And obviously, in sort of sport, it's acknowledged that if you decline or miss a drugs test, it's kind of as good as failing a drugs test. Obviously, UFC felt the same thing. And they basically pulled Wanderlei Silva from his bout with Chael Sonnen at UFC 175, and very quickly inserted TRT King Vitor Belfort into the empty space. So, what were your thoughts on that story coming out this week, Paul?
Well, as you say, if you miss a drug test or fail to take one, then you know you got something to hide. There's no real two ways about that. Otherwise, why would you? Really, exactly. So there's something not right about that. So yeah, sayonara, Wanderlei, and hello to the other, you know,
the other potential,
the other former. yeah, but the only thing is, like, you know, will the fight actually even go ahead? It was my first instinct, because all the, you know, the stuff of our good president Dana White, and they say, oh, Vitor's got a lot of work to do. You know, to ever fight in Nevada again, and that seems like all the work he had to do was to wait for Wanderlei Silva to go sprinting.
Yeah, I think one thing that people might have slightly misunderstood, or I thought they'd misunderstood, not talking about yourself, not in terms of that point, but people were saying, how come Vitor Belfort is now fighting on the same card as Weidman when he was supposed to fight Weidman? And, you know, what's happened there, you know, how has that worked? I think a lot of people have forgotten that when Belfort was supposed to fight Weidman, that was supposed to be at UFC 173.
That's correct,
obviously,
yeah.
UFC 173 is just gone. That's in the books now. So he withdrew from that fight, or they kind of mutually agreed to knock that on the head, that fight, because of the TRT. Now he's going to have, you know, over a month and a half longer to get ready for 175 than he would have had for 173. So I think a few people kind of, I think, missed the point. I think a few people had it in their mind that Vitor Belfort was originally supposed to fight Weidman at 175, and therefore how come if he's fighting on that card they haven't just put him back into the main event? Obviously, like I say, it was the time constraints that he would have had to get off TRT before UFC 173. That bout was then moved back to 175, and obviously that's how it's kind of come full circle. Yeah, I mean, I have my concerns certainly about the fight as well. I noticed I don't know if I sent it to you, but there's a piece about Dana White talking about the whole sort of situation at the press conference for Fight Night 41 in Berlin, and apparently a reporter said to him, "What's the situation if Vitor can't get licensed? You know, what happens then?" And Dana basically said, "There's no plan B. It's Vitor Belfort gets licensed or the fight gets scratched." And that, to me, was a little bit worrying.
Yeah.
Because this far out, I'm sorry, if you wanted, if you really wanted that bout to go ahead, if you really wanted Sonnen on that card, you would line up someone else and say, look, you know, we're going to put you on the prelims or something, or we're going to put you on that card, and then if Belfort's out, you're going to jump up and someone else is going to face someone else. You know, we're 30 days out, at least, from that card. I think it's kind of... it's a slight indication of how Dana feels about that bout, that they're not bothered about getting a backup plan. They're just basically saying, well, either Vitor gets licensed or that's it, you know, Sonnen's...
Yeah, well, they've already sold most of their tickets for $1,300 for anywhere on the floor.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that bothers me more about it, though, now. If you see what I mean, this is, I think I've mentioned it before, but it's almost like now they've got your money, oh well, Sonnen's not on the card, never mind, because we've got a couple of other people on the card. Well, what happens if, you know, heaven forfend, because I've jinxed it now, because I previously said before, one of those three bouts with Wanderlei Silva and, you know, Chael Sonnen and the two title fights, I previously said one of those won't happen. Well, that's already kind of come true, because Wanderlei's not going to be fighting. And I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up that Chael gets knocked off that card and that bout gets scratched.
I could see that moving on to 174 to sort of bolster its strength, because we've got what we're going to be told is the pound-for-pound greatest fighter in the world, Demetrius Johnson, again. You know, because if you don't believe that, you're not a fight fan.
Yeah.
You know, the smaller weights just don't make us, you know, draw as much, but Chael Sonnen will, and to put that on would help bolster that a lot.
Yeah. I just think if one of those title fights gets lost in addition to this bout, then suddenly you've paid probably the most for tickets ever in the UFC, and you've basically got one title fight, then you've got Caceres and Faber, and then you've got Mitrione and Struve, and then basically, you know, pretty much nobody on the whole of the rest of the card. I think the UFC have got to be very careful once again of, you know, overselling a card and then suddenly having to pull a rabbit out of a hat at the last moment to get people to care about it. I honestly think if Weidman gets injured and they lose that bout and they lose Sonnen and Belfort, I think that pay-per-view will do very low numbers. I know Rousey would still be on it, but no one is really bothered about Alexis Davis. I think everyone thinks Rousey will win that quite handily. And the thing is, if you think that the main event is going to go one way, I know that the UFC will probably say, oh, we'll look at Dillashaw and Burrell, but, you know, if you think the main event is going to go one way, and you look at the rest of the card and you go, yeah, well, that one's all right, yeah, not bothered, you're not going to pay for the pay-per-view. You know, what you want to see is a competitive main event and several, you know, relatively important bouts below it, and then obviously the prelims, you know, whatever you can get. You don't really want to see a main event that you know the outcome of ahead of time, and then the rest of them bouts you're just not really bothered about, you know. I mean, with the Caceres Faber, yeah, it's an exciting fight. As the sort of pay-per-view opener or subsequent bout to that, that's absolutely fine. I don't mind that. If that ends up as the co-main event, that's an appalling co-main event, in my opinion. You know, obviously, Faber... is a good fighter, he's a draw, but he's fighting Caceres, who is kind of one of those people who you kind of love him or you hate him, you know, but there's not that much importance, there's not much gravitas behind that fight. And then the third fight on the one before the co-main would be Mitrione Struve. You know, you've got Mitrione, who kind of, you never really know which Matt Mitrione's going to turn up, and obviously Struve's coming back from injury, so, and then you're down to like Uriah Hall and people like that would be fighting on the pay-per-view. I'm sorry, but if I'm buying a pay-per-view in the States, I'm not paying to see like Uriah Hall versus Thiago Santos and, you know, on the main card, in my opinion. You know, okay, if it's in the UK and you're paying your BT, that's fine, but if you've got to pay $50-$60
Exactly.
So I think they've got to be very careful by saying, oh well, you know, we're not going to sort anything else out, you know, there's no plan B. Well, you know, that I think that's quite short-sighted of the UFC. In my opinion, the UFC should always have a plan B, even if the plan B is to scrap that fight and get a different fight, or bump a fight from 174 to 175, or, you know, they ought to have something. They shouldn't just say, well, it hinges on this. If the, you know, the State Athletic Commission say no, then well, that's it. You know, scratch it. You know, I think that's quite a short-sighted way to do business, really.
There's a lot of hypothetical scenarios going on there, especially with one of the other title fights going off. But hey, BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar, make them fight
Yeah,
a day.
exactly. And for very
No.
cheap tickets for that one.
Well, also, as I said, they're cheap tickets. It's on free TV in the States anyway. Stick them onto the pay-per-view a day early should the worst happen, and maybe
Yeah.
sell more units. You know, it's like,
Yeah, that's a good argument. That's actually a
who
very
gives
good
a damn
argument.
about who watches it on TV or not? You know, it's already a lock. You know,
Yeah.
they're not going to make much money out of that. Pay-per-views are main revenue stream.
Yeah, because to be fair, if they bumped one, if they put like Faber and Caceres as the headliner for the Tough finale, that actually wouldn't be the worst thing. And then moved Edgar and Penn over to the main card, that would certainly get the pay-per-view buyers back in.
It would. I
But I'm,
hope it doesn't happen.
yeah, I hope so too. I mean, you could also argue that obviously, if something happens to BJ Penn or Frankie Edgar, what the hell is going to happen to that Tough card? Because there's like literally no one else on that card.
Think anyone's going to care? You know,
No.
I don't want to say anyone. I don't think the UFC will actually care too much.
Yeah, because they know everyone's paid cheap tickets, and you know,
Yeah,
they'll
they're
say,
cheap
"Well, it's all
tickets.
about Tough, really." You know, it's all about the
Yeah.
Ultimate Fighter. You know, so but yeah. So kind of, it's a bigger, wider point about UFC 175 in general. But yeah, the whole thing with Wanderlei Silva was very, very odd. I will just note. I think it's come out this morning that Wanderlei's put out some sort of video saying that he wasn't refusing to take a drugs test. He was just he didn't understand what was going on, and he thought he was supposed to sign some papers, but they were in English. He didn't understand them, and he basically said, "I'm not signing them until I have my attorney here, and he won't be back until I come back from Brazil." So whether you believe the story about whether he ran away is probably quite important to that version of events, because if he did actually run away, then that kind of implies guilt. If he just left because he didn't understand what was going on, that kind of gives you a different perspective on it. But I noticed the UFC, we were talking about this earlier, Paul, have kind of done a semi-U-turn, because Dana White was saying things like he's done and he's got a lot to prove and all this, exactly like what he said with Belfort, really.
Yeah.
And now the UFC have come around and said, "Oh well, no, Dana. When Dana said he's done, he just meant he's done for UFC 175. He's not done in the UFC necessarily, you know." So I think once again Dana's maybe spoken up a bit too early before he found out every side of the story, and now they're kind of backtracking slightly on, you know, how severely they're willing to maybe punish him. But the truth will out. Someone does know the state of events, and obviously when he goes to get a license again, you know, hopefully the actual version of events will sort of unfold. But yeah, that's a to be another to be confirmed on that one, really. See what happens with Wanderlei, and hopefully, fingers crossed, Chael Belfort goes ahead at 175. I think we both agree that's probably got more. It's a more important bout, isn't it?
Yeah, that's more interesting anyway. You know, it's more competitive, quite frankly, because you know before we got Vanderlei, and what's going to happen to him is he's going to be double leg takedowned and punched in the face for potentially 15 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And
That's
then
it.
obviously, this one they're talking about having sort of title consequences. I noticed Dana went out of his way to say if Chael wins, that he's not going to guarantee Chael a title shot, but Belfort is pretty much a lock if he wins. Although it was initially reported that they were going to fight at light heavyweight with middleweight title implications, but Dana's clarified that, I believe, in the last day or so, saying that as far as he's concerned, that fight's happening at middleweight. So I believe that is going to go ahead at middleweight. Sonnen was under some impression that it was going to be at 205, but I think Dana's basically said, well, to have any relevancy to the title at middleweight, you've got to fight at middleweight, which I think is
Yeah,
actually a
absolutely.
good point.
Well, I mean, he was prepared to fight at middleweight anyway. That's what the Silva fight was at. It was maybe
Yeah.
just, you know, can Belfort shed his TRT pounds by
Yeah.
then?
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest with you, I don't think the UFC would be that upset if it did go, if Belfort was heavy. I don't think, maybe they'd do an outward thing of maybe fining him his 20% or whatever it is, but I actually think they wouldn't really care as long as the fight went ahead. If he came in a bit heavy on it, you know, I don't think they'd be really that bothered about it. You know, it's a
That's fair
different
play. Someone would
situation.
care either. He gets 20% of Belfort's paycheck.
Yeah, but
So,
I think the UFC would compensate Belfort. I don't think they'd personally hold it against him if he came in a few pounds heavy. But hey, you know, the fight is, you know, 5 weeks away, is it? 5 weeks? 4 or 5 weeks away. So, you know, that in theory, that's plenty of time to cut weight. You know, I wouldn't have thought people would be starting to cut weight until about that time out anyway. So, you know, obviously some people do it, you know, last minute. Cut right down, build back up, and some people do it a bit more gradually, but I think 4 weeks should be plenty of time really to get down to middleweight. But yeah, have to see if the TRT has any effect on that. So our next news story is a fight that was announced this week, which I know we're both very excited about, which is Matt Brown will face Robbie Lawler at UFC on Fox 12 in San Jose. So your thoughts on initial thoughts on that fight being announced?
yay, that was pretty much it. You know, called
You
it.
called it. You called
Yeah.
it. Yeah. Give you your due.
Yeah, I'm happy. You know, it's, well, in theory, it should be great. And, you know, Matt Brown has deserved a real high level fight. And there's no doubt about it, what Robbie Lawler has done in his title fight with Hendricks, you know, very nearly winning that, and then just picking apart Allen Berger in his last one.
Yeah, I did the opposite of called it on that one. I completely got that one wrong. Ellenberger looked pretty useless for that fight. That's about all I can really say about that. But yeah, I mean this fight is one of those. It's one of those ones where if you were just going through the, you know, the who's in whose division, that's one you'd just look at and go, yeah, we want to see that fight. You know, we've got to see that fight. And now, obviously, with the fact that they kind of both come off relatively high profile wins. I don't know whether they would go so far as to say Matt Brown. I don't know if they've sort of said about the title implications, but I think if Lawler wins, I think they have pretty much said he will fight Hendricks.
Yeah, that needs to be the number one contender shot, like, really. I mean, you have
Yeah.
the, you know, the contender who's, you know, lost, won his next one if he gets past Matt Brown, who's been, you know, streaking through the division, you know, like 7 in a row now. Although,
Yeah.
what, you know, lower tier guys, you know, just about breaking into the, you really need that top 10 bout.
Yeah.
Now's the time, just give it to him,
I must
and
admit, I'm looking at this
take what
story
he's
now,
got.
and it does say that White later confirmed the fight will serve as a title eliminator. I think he was using the justification of that if Robbie Lawler beats Matt Brown, he's basically beaten, you know, the top sort of three or four in the division, and he gets a rematch. And if Brown beats Lawler, the guy who nearly beat Hendricks, then Brown is really good enough to put in that bout with Hendricks.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
that'll come as a bit of a blow to Tyron Woodley and Rory McDonald, though, because I think initially, as far as I understood, that was going to be the bout that would kind of serve to choose the number one contender. But I think with what Brown and Lawler have done in their past two bouts, I think Dana's thinking, ka-ching, you know? They're the
Yeah,
ones that people
I
want to
don't
see.
care what Woodley thinks.
No,
You know, it's, you know,
I
those
think if...
Lawler and Brown are more deserving of it.
Yeah, I personally think if whoever wins out of Woodley and McDonald, if they want to wait, I think they'll probably get the next. If they don't, then obviously it would depend on whether they win or lose their next fight. But I think they did put a little bit of a caveat on it and say that if something you know, extraordinary happens with Woodley and McDonald, then they kind of reserve the right to change it. But I can't see it happening. I think this one's going to be an all-out war, and I think, to be honest with you, the winner of it does really deserve a title shot. So, you know, that I can't wait to see that one, really. That's looking shaping up to be quite a good card as well. UFC on Fox 12. Obviously, they're trying to the Fox cards. They need to fill out with some exciting bouts because obviously that's one of their main, you know, revenue streams and everything. So that they need to be giving people value for money on those main cards. And you've got Michael Johnson, Josh Thompson. That's another good fight on that main card by the look of it. And co-mains looking like Anthony Johnson and Antonio Rogério Nogueira. Which, if Anthony Johnson's last outing was anything to go by, could be a bad night for Little Nog.
Yeah, it could well be.
But yeah, so that's looking like a really good card. Actually, I look forward to that one. There's a few fights still to be announced, but yeah, with that as the main event, you can't really go wrong. So we're gonna do we'll do a couple of questions, because we have chatted on and chewed people's ears for a fair old while. So the first question of today's show will be: if Michael Bisping loses to Kung Lee, should or will he retire from MMA? So I should maybe fill people in if people haven't heard this story, but Michael Bisping versus Kung Lee will headline a fight night event in August in Macau. I don't think they've numbered it yet, so it hasn't got an official title, but yeah, that's going to be the headline, Bisping against Kung Lee. So what are your thoughts on that fight, Paul?
Well, I don't think it should really be making claims that anyone should retire. It should really be up to them, but I guess it depends on how he loses, or how good or how bad he looks, I guess, really.
Yeah, I suppose the question...
It's going to be at the front of his mind, thinking, how many do I have left? Mm. Am I going to be a contender in the future, or am I going to go to the Chris Lytle School of Fighting and just, go out, put it all on the line and make a few quid?
Yeah, I suppose the question about retiring is kind of equally, what can he do if he loses? Who can he fight? Who will be willing to fight him? Would be kind of equally as apt questions, because obviously if you lose to Kennedy, you lose to Lee, you're back in the middle of the shake-up, and obviously people aren't going to necessarily want to fight a guy who's been in the top five and is on the way down, unless they want to claim a name. But then equally, they could take a loss, and if you lose to someone who's around the same level as you, it's going to send you down. So it's a tricky one. I mean, I don't think he will retire. Should he retire? Well, like you say, you don't like to ever sort of say that someone should retire, but I think if you can't beat Kennedy and then equally you can't beat Kung Lee, then you need to be looking at some other way of fighting, in terms of, exactly like you said, going out, leaving it all on the line and just having exciting fights. I think we kind of have written him off from the title picture since he lost to Kennedy, but I think this would really set it in stone, wouldn't it? If he lost to Kung Lee, I just think he would just have to go after interesting fights, maybe fight other aging fighters or something like that. I don't see him having much, draw anywhere other than in the UK, certainly, if he loses again. But I mean, I think in the UK he still probably would draw here. Whether it be a main event is another question. I suppose it probably would be, wouldn't it, for us?
Well, that depends. I mean, if we're only getting Fight Pass cards and the price of his contract is something crazy like $275 just to show, worth it? Is it worth putting him on to pay him that much just to weigh in, should the fight last 25 minutes or 25 seconds?
Well, I don't know what his current contract length is. I mean, one other question that you could say, other than retiring, is might the UFC say, well, look, you either take a massive pay cut or see you later? They've done it before. I suppose the argument would be that, he is kind of the British standout poster boy, isn't he? Although he's
still pretty popular. I mean, the guys who that's happened with before, John Fitch and, Yushin Okami, who...
Yeah.
A lot of people just, were completely and utterly indifferent to them. Love them or hate them, which, Bisping has. He's got strong followers and got a lot of haters as well.
Yeah.
The people are going to want to see him, kick ass or get ass kicked.
Yeah, exactly. He can kind of, he has that kind of effect on people, doesn't he? So I think he'll always kind of get people wanting to fight.
Polarizing.
But every time he loses a fight, though, I think slightly less people will call him out. Because I think the thing is, before, when he was in the top four or five, people would call him out because they fancied themselves to beat him. They thought, well, if I beat him, I'll be up in the top two or three, and I think he's an easy fight. I don't think as many people will be calling him out if he's like 15th in the division, because people won't care. Number 10 isn't going to call out number 15 for no reason. But when Bisping was number 4 or 5 and Kennedy was number 15, of course Kennedy's going to call him out. You know, but people like Rockhold and stuff, it doesn't make any sense for them to fight Bisping, especially if Kung Lee wins. You know, if Bisping wins, then maybe you can argue he jumps up a spot or two and it makes it more relevant. But if Bisping loses again, I can't see anyone in the top five or six would be stupid to fight Bisping, because he's one of those fighters who he could beat you. You know, he's a good fighter. You know, if he fought Rockhold, could he win? Yeah, of course he could win. And that would screw Rockhold right over, you know. Whereas if Rockhold fought someone else who was in the top two or three and he lost, you know, maybe he drops down a position or two. If he fights Bisping and Bisping's, you know, ranked number 12, he's going to drop a long way. So I think a lot of Michael Bisping's future career rides on this bout, purely because I think if he wins, he's back in the win column, people still keep calling him out because they still think he's a good name, they still think they can beat him. I think if he loses, he's going to start plummeting down the rankings, unfortunately, and that could be sort of almost the beginning of the end, you know. But yeah, I don't think either of us think he should retire or he will retire, but I think it is would you agree it's sort of like a must win for him going forward?
Yeah, thanks. Pretty much, like, if he's to remain any sort of relevance or future, desire toward a title, he needs to win this, or else it's probably just going to be the gatekeeper journeyman category for a few fights for him.
Yeah, exactly. So, which I'll leave it up to you, Paul. Which question would you like to go on to? The one at the Roy Nelson and Mark Hunt, or the Gunnar Nelson question?
Oh, the Nelson one.
I knew you were going to say that as soon as I said it.
Boy.
Which, the Battle of the Bulge or the...
Go for it.
Yeah, we'll go for the Battle of the Bulge. Okay, so this question is, who wins the Battle of the Bulge? And I'll give you a bit more background on this. This is the fight I think it was announced this week, between Mark Hunt and Roy Nelson. They're going to fight in Japan later in the year. It's believed to be UFC Fight Night 51, September 20th, the Saitama Super Arena, the famed ex-Pride venue. And Hunt has dubbed it the Battle of the Bulge for obvious reasons, because they are both on the slightly rotund side. Who wins that fight for you, Paul?
I think Roy, probably.
Oh, okay.
they're both very, very heavy, hard hitters, etc. Roy's got a tendency to want to stand and try and knock people out in that these days, but again, if he wants to play it smart, he's got great grappling credentials that he hasn't really showcased, apart from really in his time in The Ultimate Fighter, so he should be able to put Hunt down and just work him over that way and just drag it out as long as possible and just let that fatigue get the best of him.
Yeah, I hope in some ways it doesn't sort of go longer than two or three rounds, because the last thing you want to see is like them sort of falling all over each other, like has happened occasionally. I'm thinking of
there was
Mir and Nelson was a bit of an embarrassment, wasn't it?
Yeah, they both weren't really on great form, but then again, there was Bigfoot Silva and Mark Hunt.
That's true.
It went
that's
five
very
rounds,
true.
And what the hell?
I must admit,
the only thing holding those two guys up was just adrenaline.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you need, though, isn't it? I think sometimes especially if the fighter who's very fatigued is losing, there's kind of a thing of let's just get through it almost. But I think they both knew they had a chance to win that bout, and that kind of just kept them in it, didn't it? But I must admit, you're saying Nelson. I don't know. I'm feeling Hunt. I think Nelson's got the KO power, but I mean Hunt has got a head like a boulder. Like, it's very hard to knock that dude out. And I think the grappling thing with Nelson is a weird thing, because I often think he's got opportunities to try and use it, and he doesn't seem to want to.
So I'm thinking with my logical head now.
See, I'm thinking Hunt. If I'm Hunt, I'm kicking that guy's legs all day long. I'm coming in, I'm kicking Nelson, I'm going out, I'm coming in, I'm kicking him, I'm going out, because Roy Nelson will get tired just walking around anyway, as will Hunt. But if you're kicking him on the leg over and over again, I don't think he'd even be able to stand up after a couple of rounds.
Yeah.
So, but again, it's one of those ones where you can really make a case for either one, and it really depends on what their game plan is going into it. You know, if they just have if they're just like throwing bombs, then I'd pick Nelson. But I would like to think obviously it backfired on me in the Ellenberger situation, I'd like to think that Hunt would be thinking, well, what can I do that Nelson's not going to have an answer to? You know, what's in my game plan? You know, obviously being a former, it was K1 kickboxer, wasn't he? I don't know if he ever won a K1 event, but he certainly a noted kickboxer. I'd be thinking, well, you know, that's my weapon, would be to take, you know, a guy who's going to be knackered wandering around for a round anyway. You know, if I take his legs out from under him as well, you know, that would be my thought. But the trouble is, sometimes you think, you know, I'm speculating on what he's going to think. Maybe he'll think the same when he gets in the cage. Maybe he doesn't do that. You know, that's the thing with a game plan. Some people stick to it and do it very well, like a Dillashaw. Other people just get in there and just think, I'm just going to lamp this guy. You know, so, you know, it's all speculation, but it's another one where it really could go either way, and that's what makes it an exciting fight. But like I say, I really hope it kind of is like a one or two round absolute war, rather than one or two rounds where they kind of walk round each other a lot, then they're absolutely knackered, and then they just end up like throwing just like nothing shots, just like, you know, pillow shots at each other, because they can't lift their arms up, you know, because they're so tired. But yeah, I think that's a very good fight, and I think that's a typical sort of fight that would be good over in Japan. Obviously, Hunt's fought there several times.
Yeah,
for Pride.
He's going to have a big fan following in that there. It's
exactly.
Probably turning the land that made him famous.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's good that they're getting back over there, because I don't think they've been there for a little while, and obviously it's a market they want to sort of keep up. So, yeah, I'm looking here. It's actually Hunt's 14th MMA fight in Japan. So yeah, he's going to have a big fan following. I'm just looking at some quotes here from Hunt, and he's basically saying that, you know, Nelson's got that sort of bomb of a right hand, but, you know, he's got power too, and, you know, who's going to have the more power on the night, sort of thing. So it's going to be a bit of a slugfest, I think. Although the sensible thing for Nelson would be to get him to the ground and grapple him. It's Nelson's one of those fighters where I just think once he gets in there, he just thinks, I'm just going to keep trying to punch the guy until I knock him out, basically. You know, I think that's why he never goes to the ground. I think he's had ample opportunities to go to the ground in all of the, you know, he's had a fair few fights in the UFC now, and I just don't think he wants to. I think he just wants to hit someone, which is fine, you know, but it
sounds reasonable.
It's going to limit you slightly when you get towards the top of the division, you know, and they're moving out the way and you're panting around the octagon trying to chase, you know. But yeah, that's an exciting fight. You know, they've done some good matchmaking. I think it was almost one that wrote itself, a bit like Brown and Lawler. Kind of like, oh, have these two guys fought before? No? Right, main event. You know, so sometimes it works that way, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, cool. So we'll be saying sayonara shortly, but we can't leave without giving you guys the Gareth A. Davies biscuit of the week, which Paul will announce as the...
It is the dark chocolate hobnob.
The dark chocolate hobnob, of course. What else could it have been this week? You know, so we're actually going to try and get a direct answer from Gareth on the next podcast to find out what his favourite biscuit is, or indeed what his biscuit of the week is, just in case, you know, he likes the same biscuit every week. You know, that would kind of dull it down a bit. So we're going to try and get an official word from Gareth A. Davies as to his biscuit of the week for next one. But for this week, it is the dark chocolate hobnob. And, you know, get yourself out, get a packet, and see what you think. Paul, you've got a packet for £1 this week, I believe.
Indeed.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not expensive. Give it a go. You know, tweet Gareth if you enjoy it. Tell him, you know, have you had a dark chocolate hobnob? If you haven't, it's your biscuit of the week, so get yourself down to Poundland and pick some up. And, yeah, so I think we'll on that note, on that bombshell, as they say, we'll leave you. Thank you very much to Paul for your assistance today.
All right, thank you.
And I don't believe we are back next week. I think we are 2 weeks out, which is going to put us right at 31st. So that would be for UFC 174. So we'll be back, excuse me, on Saturday the 14th for a bit of a preview of UFC 174. Obviously, some more news and another biscuit of the week. So for now, we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.